There was already a robust debate about how best to make our communities safer from wildfire, and then came the September fires, pointing out a number of things. Among them, forest management does not matter a whole lot when a fire starts in town, as the Alameda Drive fire did in Ashland on its way to destroying so many thousands of homes in Talent and Phoenix. Another thing, the houses may have been far from the woods, but were mostly made of wood. So we'll take up a couple of angles on fires and building fire resistance into communities in this discussions. Our guests, Dominic Della Sala, a biologist and ecologist, chief scientist at Wild Heritage, has a long history of studying forests and fires. Dominic, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks. Always a pleasure to be on your show, Jeffrey.
It's good to have you here. Mike Roddy joins us as well. He's a builder with Butte Built Better, and they recently together authored an opinion piece in the Free Talent News and Review about fire preparation and resilience. I meant to call you an architect, Mike. You are an architect, right?
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate being on the show.
Good to have you both here. So, Dominic Della Sala, let's start off with you. This is the first chance I've had to talk to you about the September fires. They were physically very close to you, as I understand it, from a piece in the Seattle Times. Give your overall impression first.
Yeah, thanks, Jeffrey. I'm one of the fortunate returned evacuees because my home is still standing while my neighborhood was pretty much annihilated east of Talent Avenue, which is incredibly sad for me to see every day now with hundreds of people with no homes. And in a very surreal way, on the day of the fire, September 8th, I was actually writing an opinion piece on how all the warning signals were in play for a catastrophic fire event like what we were seeing in California to descend on Oregon when my power went off. The same time I was writing the op-ed, I ran outside to see this huge black cloud of smoke approaching my neighborhood and knew immediately that it wasn't a forest fire and that it was an urban wildfire that was actually consuming a good chunk of my community.
Wow. So this is sort of like the worst nightmare. I mean, for a lot of people, not just for you, but I mean, this is the kind of thing you've been warning about for some time, haven't you?
I really hate to be right about this, but I've been asking state and federal lawmakers and just about every elected official to direct funding to prepare communities through home readiness and home hardening and not logging in the backcountry, which, as we've seen from the Alameda fire, has nothing to do with protecting homes. And in fact, will only make the matter worse by putting more carbon into the atmosphere, because this was mostly a climate-driven extreme fire weather event that was sparked by a suspected arsonist.
Mike Roddy, give us your angle on this. You've had some exposure to destructive fires in communities in the past, haven't you?
Yes. I've worked in many locations post-fire, places like Kobe, Japan, Oakland, and other cities, and particularly Malibu. And the effects of the fire was similar, and also how it was addressed. Fires blew through those towns, and particularly and where they were close to each other, less than quarter-acre lots. And even though there was vegetation there, the velocity of the fire, in addition to the wind, was increased by the fact that they were built out of lumber. So the lumber fueled the fires and created the embers, which in turn ignited the houses downwind. And this is also what occurred in Paradise. And those kinds of fires are unstoppable, and the fire departments and marshals will tell you they just kind of try to set up a fire break and hope for the best. And in all those locations I mentioned, hundreds or sometimes thousands of houses burned down in very short order.
So it's got certainly that similarity to a forest fire in the sense that it's wood burning, but it's wood that's been sculpted into material for houses. But, you know, same sort of situation, really.
That's correct. There's about 20 tons of lumber in a typical American house. And defensible space and closing the eaves and using non-combustible external materials are all good things to attempt, and certainly for typical fires. But when you have a really hot fire, the embers and the radiant heat tend to overcome those.
So I have read some of your comparisons, Mike, to building techniques in other countries. I mean, how much less wood do you find people using in places outside the United States, or for that matter, in other parts of the United States?
I've been to other countries and love to travel, as does my wife. And it's very rare to find a country that includes wood and its structural materials. They might have wood floors and sometimes wood window treatments, but it's not really what people like to do. And evidence of that is I'll mention a few cities that at one time built out of wood. London is one. They had a fire in 1666 that burned the town down. They banned wood framing after that and haven't had fire since. And then Moscow, 1812, Chicago, 1871, they just said, we're done with lumber framing. And they've been fine ever since because their experiences were similar in the fires being spread by wood.
And how
fast just haven't waked up to those facts yet due to the strength of the timber industry.
How fast are we consuming wood to be able to build houses from it? That's 20 tons, you said, of lumber per house?
Yeah, that's correct.
Wow. So that's...
And also it's even worse than that because it's lumber that doesn't have any bark and it's very dry, so it ignites easily.
Mm-hmm. Dominic Della Sala, you've visited a forest or two, and I say this jokingly, but I mean, what do you see
right
out there in the rate of regeneration to be able to recover the wood that's getting used in all the homes being built?
Yeah, it's just not sustainable, Jeffrey, and we know that. I mean, anybody that gets on an airplane and flies over our area and takes a look out the window, you see a shotgun blast of clear cuts across the landscape. And so not only is it not sustainable because we have liquidated almost all old-growth forests, which are carbon-storing forests that we need for our climate, but we've made them more fire-prone. And we know from dozens of studies that when we have extreme fire weather, which is being increasingly triggered by climate chaos, on top of an industrial forestry landscape with plantations and logging slash, that becomes fire's gasoline. And so we see these big fires spreading through logged over landscapes that is really causing the problem that we're trying to get around by building now with sustainable climate-friendly and fire-safe materials. And that's why I got introduced to Mike, and we've been talking about how can we rebuild Phoenix and Talent literally out of the ashes without using wood so we don't have this problem again in the future, because we're seeing more of this in Western communities now because of climate chaos.
We're talking to Dominic Della Sala and Mike Roddy here on the Jefferson Exchange. Dominic has been on the program a few times before, chief scientist now at Wild Heritage, previously at the Geos Institute, a long history with studying forests and fires within them. Mike Roddy is an architect with Butte Built Better. You can join the conversation on the exchange. I can't take phone calls because we're not going to do that hello, you're on the air thing, but we will take your emails at jx@jeffnet.org. So you wrote a piece together for the Talent News and Review, which essentially brings up the story of the three little pigs. Mike Roddy, lead us down that trail.
Yeah. Humans have a long history with fire, obviously, and that's why so many of us have finally waked up to taking kind of extreme protections against it. And the reason, there's many reasons for resistance to this occurring in the United States. One of them is that wood is artificially cheap. Until recently, you could get a 2x4 for a few dollars, although those prices fluctuate quite a bit. It's more expensive in other places, but the timber industry is heavily subsidized, and they have a $20 million annual public relations budget to tell the country how wonderful it is to build out of wood. And so it's been difficult, since we have to compete at volume for other materials, to try to match wood's prices. We've done that in the past, but it depends on the commodity fluctuation prices of wood and steel. But in any case, framing is only about 18% of total house hard cost. So it is achievable. The main obstacle is just people's habits, contractor and developer resistance, and the perception of the public that a house is supposed to be built out of wood. So given that I lived in the Rogue Valley for almost 20 years, and I consider it a pretty enlightened and progressive part of the world, I think it's a really good opportunity for people in the area to show leadership. And it could create jobs not only locally, but it could be a place where we can educate the rest of the West and these very dangerous fire areas on how to build safely.
So walk the person who is interested but not sure into how this is done, because, you know, all of us who do a little stuff around the house are used to nailing things to the walls or putting up the walls themselves and know what to do with wood studs. But is steel studs, is that a whole different realm of dealing with what's in your walls?
It's different, and the only thing you really need to have in order to learn how to build with steel is time. And wood is a little bit faster because nowadays, especially in production, they use nail guns. In the case of steel, we use tech screws, which are much stronger. But it takes a little longer, but there's ways to get around that. Sometimes we ship walls. Sometimes we ship walls cut and bundled and with a lot of pre-drilling for the heavier elements. So the basic principles are the same, because when steel few decades ago decided to try to get into the residential market, we kind of mimicked wood. So the house looks identical from the outside. The only difference that stands out is that since a steel stud is much stronger than a 2x4, we can put them 2 feet apart instead of 16 inches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so it's interesting to look at.
It's not a big deal.
Yeah, it's interesting to look at a house with steel studs. It, you know, it's got that silvery look that you don't really expect, but the overall structure looks pretty much the same. You have mimicked what's going on with wood.
Right. You can't tell them apart. And the contractors and subs struggle with it at first. But if they're trained properly and somebody is around to show them how to do it and they have some patience, then once they start using it, they really like it. And that speaks for a lot of builders I know in California.
So Dominic Della Sella, the piece that you guys wrote together for the Talent News and Review not only talks about changing our construction types to prevent incidents like what happened with the Almeida Drive fire and all these wood structures burning, but also climate change is woven throughout the argument. Talk, if you would, about the impacts of the various building materials we're talking about here.
Yeah, that's a great question, Jeffrey. And both Mike and I have looked at the carbon footprint. And in my own work, I published and worked with Oregon's top carbon scientists out of Oregon State University that have looked at this question and have done carbon accounting, comparing steel versus wood and concrete. And you're going to hear exaggerations from the timber industry that wood is a climate-friendly product, and it's not. And the truth of the matter is that when we cut down a forest that has been absorbing and storing carbon for centuries, that creates a carbon debt to the atmosphere by putting most of that carbon back upstairs. Very little of it is stored in product. And those products, whether it's paper or framing, aren't around very long, whereas if the forest wasn't logged, it would be there storing its carbon for centuries. And so we are in a climate emergency. We've got to do everything possible to reduce our emissions, get off fossil fuels, protect forests, because they're the lungs of the planet. And we can be manufacturing steel with a lower carbon footprint using recycled materials, and Mike can go into that, and also using clean renewable energy to produce steel that will make it even better for the environment than we already know that there are problems with cutting down forests that are only going to contribute to more global warming problems.
Dominic Della Sella and Mike Roddy, our guests on the Jefferson Exchange. Dominic Della Sella has been a scientist working in the forests and studying forests and fires for many, many years. He's now the chief scientist at Wild Heritage. Mike Roddy is an architect and builder. You can join the conversation on the Exchange as we talk about what to make houses out of and how we make more fire-resilient communities or resistant communities in the first place. You can contact us by email only at jx@jeffnet.org. Mike, you got briefly into the cost of framing, and you mentioned 18% goes to the framing of the cost of a home. But so what's the differential then between steel, for example, and wood studs?
In the past, depending on the commodity price fluctuations, we've been able to match wood framing prices. But typically when we do that, the subcontractor doesn't make a profit. So there is a built-in premium. And as I said, it fluctuates, but the long-term average of that premium is about 20%. So if you multiply 20% by 18%, it's 3.6% more in hard cost to frame a house out of steel. That's a pretty solid number. It fluctuates in both directions. But the reason I think, apart from fire safety, we shouldn't be too worried about it is, historically, the insurance industry has charged the same fire insurance premium rates for concrete and steel as they do for lumber, which does not make any sense because the fire damage and death rate from inert materials is much lower than wood. And this is something we've been struggling with for a while, but we have attorneys working on talking to the insurance industry and straightening this out. If that occurs, steel and concrete and masonry will be kind of hard to resist because the insurance companies are very scared about what's happened recently.
Yeah,
They've had to dip into reserves to pay off the payments, and the banks are going crazy. So you're going to see a lot of inert material construction in the next few years just on the basis of insurance going way up. And Paradise, it went from 600 a year to about 2,000 a year, and those prices were only guaranteed for 2 years. And in Malibu, where I did some building, and in Oakland Hills, the premiums were $10,000 to $20,000 a year.
Mm-hmm. So I'm glad you brought up concrete and masonry, because we need to talk about the outsides of the homes. I've talked mostly about the studs thus far, but obviously the place where a fire is going to make first contact is the exterior walls. So what kind of cladding are we talking about here to make a house more fire resistant?
Yeah. Oh, concrete and masonry are both really good for fire resistant, but they cost more than steel. And it doesn't kind of work so well with what people are used to in the U.S. as far as cavities for insulation, time of construction, and sometimes wind and earthquake resistance. You know, they're good products, but typically they're not competitive in the U.S. Mm-hmm. because labor costs are higher here. And there's significantly more labor to put in masonry and concrete.
Now, what's the availability like of these products, particularly in the part of the country we live in? Because if we're talking about having to rebuild several thousand homes in Phoenix and Talent alone, would there be enough material to be able to get all those places rebuilt at once while you got other parts of Oregon, other parts of California also needing to rebuild a bunch of homes at the same time?
It's not difficult to do if the builder and subcontractor are set up for production. And I have experience in that. After the earthquake and fire in Kobe, Japan, we built 300 housing units in 4 months, all light gauge steel, and they weren't even panelized. They were stick framed. So that's not going to be an issue.
Now, what about for mobile homes? Because that's been a major issue. I don't see us building. I mean, I can see the steel studs, but you start talking about concrete on the outside of a mobile home, you start really considerably adding to the weight, and it does need to move.
Well, mobile homes are an interesting niche, and we're not really prepared to build something to compete with mobile homes because, you know, we'd be considerably more expensive than a 3 or 4% premium in that situation because their specifications are not at all like what you use for a regular stick-built home. But we're looking into that. I've got people kind of brainstorming various designs to be able to replace those tinderbox mobile homes with things that aren't going to burn. But stay tuned. That's where we're a ways away from being able to come up with models that would work in that situation that are affordable.
Mm-hmm. Can existing homes be retrofit, existing stick-built homes, to the kinds of things you're talking about? Could stucco, for example, be an improvement upon clapboard siding?
Yeah. Stucco and fiber siding are good ideas, but it depends on the nature of the fire. When you have a really hot fire, as you had in Talon or Paradise or Santa Rosa or all these other places, a lot of those houses were pretty well protected on the exterior, and many of them had metal roofs. And the radiant heat tended to overwhelm the exterior and find a way in there to ignite the wood studs. Mm-hmm. It happened over and over again. And I've seen that in other locations as well. Stucco is the way to go as far as exterior protection. It's even better than fiber cement because there's no voids or anything. But you sleep a lot better if you're in a house that is not going to be contributing to a wind-driven fire, which is dangerous and deadly. Mm-hmm. And it's not hard to do. We're never going to run out of steel. 68% of the steel that's produced and sold in the U.S. is recycled.
Oh, that much? Okay.
4% of the earth is iron ore. It's a non-issue where we should be worried about what we're doing to the forest and our rate of destruction.
Dominic De La Sala, just a couple minutes left to cover a fairly large portion of this op-ed that you and Mike Roddy built for the Talent News and Review, which is, you mentioned something about 10 years before all hell breaks loose in climate change. There are people who think it's breaking loose already.
Yeah, that's the irony in all of this, Jeffrey. As I mentioned, I started this by writing an op-ed the day that my power then went off. It's happening a lot faster than any of us climate change scientists have been projecting with our models. And that's the real concern here, that the glass is becoming less half full by the year. And if we're going to turn this around, we need innovative solutions here that do both lower our carbon footprint by getting off of fossil fuels and protecting forests, and look at the innovation of builders and architects like Mike that are trying to do something different here with sustainable, fire-resistant, climate-ready homes that give us hope. And I see my town of Talent and nearby Phoenix literally rising from the ashes like the mythical Phoenix. But only if we do it right this time. If we do it the same way, it's just going to continue to kick the can down the road here.
I noticed the Talent City Council had recently passed an ordinance that said that the areas that are mobile homes will stay zoned for mobile homes only. So that's one move, but more moves to cover. There's a lot of stuff going on, obviously, at the city councils of both Phoenix and Talent to decide how to restore the 2,400 approximately homes destroyed in those two communities alone. Dominic De La Sala, biologist and ecologist, chief scientist at Wild Heritage, thank you so much for joining us once again on the Jefferson Exchange.
You bet, Jeffrey. Thanks for an enlightening conversation.
And thank you. Mike Roddy, architect and builder at Butte Built Better, thank you for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
It's been a pleasure. And if anyone has questions, I can be reached at mike.greenframe@gmail.com.
Mike.greenframe@gmail.com. Okay, Mike Roddy, thanks so much for joining us. Dominic De La Sala, thank you. This is the Jefferson Exchange.